First of all, thank you for the opportunity to give this talk here in the symposium. As the title indicates, I'll be talking about the role of agroforestry in mitigating greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S. Although the title talks about greenhouse gases, I will be focusing my talk on only carbon dioxide, and I will explain why in a few minutes. I will also try to make it really brief if I can. I'm fully aware of the fact that I'm standing between you and the lunch as the last speaker. I am sure that you have seen this graph before. This was published by EPA this year. It shows that over the last 20 years, if you look at the greenhouse gas emissions by gas type in the U.S., overall, the greenhouse gas emissions have gone up by 7.3% from 1990 to 2009. And 83% or 84% of that is carbon dioxide. You also have seen these figures before, I assume, shows the global fossil carbon emissions and also the share by region. And we have heard, if you haven't seen these figures, that the United States accounts for 25% of the global CO2 emissions from burning fossil fuels. Now, I'm kind of trying to set the stage before I start talking about agroforestry's role in the U.S. in mitigating carbon dioxide. But first of all, let me ask the question, is agroforestry even relevant in the U.S. context? Often when you talk about agroforestry, people ask the question, oh, that is a practice in the tropics. True, I come from the tropics. But is agroforestry relevant in the U.S.? I represent the Center for Agroforestry from the University of Missouri. And as many of you know, there is a strong agroforestry program at the University of Florida, directed by Dr. P.K. Nair. There are some other programs also in the U.S. and in Canada. So what are we doing in terms of agroforestry? Is agroforestry even relevant? Agroforestry is relevant even in the U.S. context. If you look at the global population, we'll be hitting 7 billion in a couple of weeks. And by 2050, we are projecting to reach 9.1 billion people. So we need to feed the world. And we need to try to use every possible approach to make that happen. And it's not just about food security, it's also about energy security. And it has been concluded by many experts that agroforestry is one of the options, one of the answers when it comes to sustaining agricultural productivity and achieving food as well as energy security. So agroforestry is important, not just in the tropical context, but also in a temperate context, and also when it comes to the U.S. Now, if you look at the global statistics, you will see that 17% of the world's arable land is in agroforestry. How about the U.S. share? How much of land is under agroforestry in the U.S.? Unfortunately, we don't know. That is the short answer. We have guesstimates, but that's about it. We are trying to get a handle on how much land is under agroforestry as a viable option to accomplish food security as well as energy security, even in this country, but we still don't know, honestly, how much land is in agroforestry. So now, when we need to talk about agroforestry's role then in mitigating CO2, what am I going to talk about today? Without knowing what is the land base, how can I even give a talk about it? I will attempt But let me start with a global picture here. If you look at IPCC published figures, published data, they expect agroforestry to sequester a lot of carbon, as evident from this particular figure. The longest bar, I know it may be a bit hard to read way in the back, but that's agroforestry. Your wetland restoration, restoration of degraded lands, agroforestry, here is forest management, grazing management, rice management, and cropland management. Of all the land use systems, you can see agroforestry has got the greatest potential. And why? Let me bring you back to the U.S. If you look at this figure here, again from that EPA report that came out this year, why do you think agroforestry on the previous graph shows great potential? It could be a factor of the land area available for agroforestry. But it is also because agroforestry combines crops and trees. And here is average carbon density in live forestry pool as of 2009 in the U.S. As you can see, wherever we have forests, the carbon density is higher. The Pacific Northwest, the Appalachian Mountains, the Central Hardwood, and the Southeast, Northeast, also here up north, you will see that wherever we have forests, you have higher carbon density. When we have cropland or pasture or grassland, what do you see? Not a lot of trees. So the carbon density is, of course, lower. And keep in mind, this does not show the ag or the, you know, the grazing land or the pasture land carbon at all, simply looking at trees. But my question here is it possible by incorporating more trees into treeless pastures or ag land or grazing land, is it possible for us to increase the carbon density? Of course, the answer is yes. When you add trees, you can increase carbon above ground as well as below ground and also in the soil. So there is potential. The land base is there to introduce trees. The land base to practice agroforestry is available. And agroforestry can be a viable option to increase the carbon density even in existing forest land. If you look at the forest land, most often when you look at carbon sequestration potential, in almost all the estimates you will see carbon sequestration potential of managed forests. What fraction of our forests are being managed? Very little. Let me give you statistics. I come from Missouri. You have 14 million acres of forest land in Missouri. And here is Missouri. Out of the 14 million acres of forest land, less than 5% is being managed. So there is opportunity to manage the forest, introduce agroforestry options. By managing, I mean thinning, and perhaps forest farming as an accepted agroforestry practice could be adopted on a fraction of that land base. And so there is potential to increase carbon density even in existing forest land in the U.S. Now let me show you at least a few data slides to illustrate the fact that agroforestry indeed can store more carbon above ground as well as below ground. And let me start with the below ground picture first. And we had a very lively discussion earlier today about the depth that we need to look into when we examine soil carbon sequestration. And we concluded somewhat that it depends on the system. Depends on where you are looking at and in what kind of a system you are examining that soil profile. And that picture there shows root length or images of the roots from soils from four different agroecosystems. The first one is that I'm pointing here is continuously grazed pasture. And this one here is rotationally grazed. Here is just a grass buffer. And here is an agroforestry buffer where you have grasses and trees. As you can see here, the root length density in this graph is much higher for the agroforestry as well as the grass. But as you go deeper, look at this, the agroforestry, because of the presence of trees and the tree roots, the root length density is much higher at deeper depths of the soil profile. And if you look at the soil carbon here, it's the same story. With agroforestry, there is potential to put more carbon into the soil when you are combining trees and crops. And here is a graph that's showing the total root length. Same story there. And here is another one from an alley cropping system. In agroforestry, as you can imagine, since there are trees in a set configuration, there could be spatial variation as well as temporal variation depending on what kind of trees and crops are being used in the system. This particular one, you know, with poplar with corn-soybean rotation, as is clear here, over time, the carbon in the system is increasing. Zone 1 is close to the trees, as you can see here. And look at this 2002 line. And as you move away from the tree row into the cropping zone where the crops are being grown, the alley, you can see that the carbon is nearly, or this is the soil organic carbon on the y-axis, you can see that it's nearly as high as close to the trees. And because of the litter and because of the fine roots, now the alley is rich in soil organic carbon, whereas earlier that was not the case. Near the tree, where the tree had the most influence in terms of putting more below ground carbon through roots as well as from the litter, was concentrated around the trees. But as the trees got bigger, now that benefit is expanding into the alley where the crops are being grown. Here is another graph that shows both above and below ground carbon in litter and roots. Here is poplar, and this data is from a riparian buffer agroforestry system. Let's start from corn, soybean, and you can see the total carbon above as well as below here. And let's compare that corn with, let's say, switchgrass, a perennial grass, farm season grass that's being used in a riparian buffer system. As you can see, if you look at the above and the below, that's about twice the amount of carbon that is accumulated here. And let's compare that with now the poplar and corn, that's about five times more carbon. So by introducing trees into an agriculturally dominated landscape, you have the potential to put more carbon into deeper layers of the soil, of course on the surface layers as well, but also for a longer term. As this figure shows, as the trees get older, they put more carbon. And they keep that carbon in their woody biomass. And if the woody biomass is being used for furniture or structural material, then that carbon stays for a longer time. Of course, not in place in the agroforestry system, but in other places. But that carbon is sequestered and put in place, like in a forestry system. So benefits, you know, it combines the benefits of an agricultural system with the benefits of a forestry system, because agroforestry combines both trees and crops. Now, moving on to the potential for the U.S. Agroforestry can help increase carbon density. If you look at less than 10% of the grazing land or the pasture land, and that would amount to about 23.7 million hectares, and about 10% of our crop land. Again, let's target the marginal land. That would be about 17.9 million hectares. And that figure shows the land use systems in terms of, you know, the cropland, the grassland. Cropland shows in yellow, and then the grassland and the forest land in green. And the other type of green there, I don't know how, whatever green that is, olive green, that is the grassland pasture or the rangeland. So it shows that across the U.S., you have potential either to incorporate into an agricultural system or a pasture system or even into a forest system. In every state, the opportunity exists to adopt agroforestry. As a result, there is tremendous potential to sequester carbon using agroforestry as a practice in the U.S. That is the take-home message. Now I'm going to introduce to you a literature review and synthesis that we did for a book chapter. So we collected data from existing publications, most of them journal articles, but some gray literature. In case if they did not present real carbon numbers, we kind of assumed 50% carbon. So there are a lot of assumptions going into this estimate of carbon sequestration potential of U.S. agroforestry. Keep that in mind. In particular, the land area, we had to guesstimate because there are no real data available when it comes to the land that is under agroforestry in the U.S. And we could only find data for 4 of the 5 accepted temperate agroforestry practices, and they are silver pasture, alley cropping, riparian buffers, and windbreaks. I'm not going to explain what these individual systems are. I'm going to assume that you know what these systems are. The only one that I did not, or we did not use, is this one here, that is the forest farming. We did not, in fact, Dr. Ranjit Vodawat is sitting back there. He is the one who did all the compiling of the data, and he could not find anything related to forest farming where we could just extract some numbers for carbon sequestration potential. So we could not include that, but everything else is included. So let me start with silver pasture. If we could use 10% of the pasture land that is available, that would amount to 23.7 million hectares. Silver pasture can be done in two different ways. The first one, as you see in the first figure there, is converting a pasture into a silver pastoral system by introducing trees. And normally when we talk about silver pasture, that is the kind of silver pasture that we talk about. We often tend to ignore the second kind of silver pasture, which we often take for granted, that is grazing or improving the pasture under an existing forest and converting an existing forest into a silver pastoral system. It's controversial because if you do that, then you're not going to have a regenerating forest, at least for a while. But it can be done. We have data, we have done research on it. It can be done in a sustainable manner. It's possible. So that is the second way of creating a silver pastoral system. And what is the potential for doing that in the U.S.? Out of more than 300 million hectares of forest land that we have available, 54 million hectares can be used as grazing land. Actually, that's the classification. 54 million hectares is classified as grazing land or grazed forest. Most often, that is a dangerous practice because that kills the forest. But if done properly, as a silver pastoral system, by managing not just the understory component, but also the overstory, the tree component, it can be a sustainable system, can be a healthy ecosystem. So if you add the 54 million hectares and the 10% of the pasture land, that is 23.7 million hectares, that is over 70 million hectares available for a silver pastoral system in the U.S. And we are using a very high number, carbon sequestration potential, because that is the number that is available now based on young silver pastoral systems 6.1 megagram carbon per hectare per year, and if you multiply them together, you get 474 teragram carbon per year. A lot of carbon that can be sequestered using silvopastoral systems in the U.S. Alley cropping, another system where a lot of research has shown that it can be a very viable option for landowners. But adoption has been slow, like in any other system. You plant wide rows of trees, and then in the middle, you plant an agronomic crop or pasture grass. And in this picture, you have a cotton pecan silvopastoral system, also a cotton pine, southern pine silvopastoral system, also a soybean black walnut or alley cropping system. What's the potential for alley cropping? Let's say if 10% of the cropland, that would be about 17.9 million hectares, could be converted to an alley cropping system, that would amount to nearly 61 teragram of carbon per year. Moving on to windbreaks. Following the Dust Bowl of the 30s, in the Plain States, there were lots of miles and miles, hundreds of thousands of miles of windbreaks were established. Some of them are coming down now since the commodity prices, corn and soybean, wheat, they're all going through the roof. But if we could keep them, and if we could keep planting windbreaks, there is a lot of potential to improve yield and a lot of potential to sequester carbon. So let's say 5% of the cropland, that would be 8.95 million hectares from the Plain States, if that's being used. And let's use the assumption, you know, either poplar, very fast growing, and you saw some data earlier, or white spruce, or a combination of the two, with a 20-year rotation, that could sequester, the windbreaks in the U.S. could sequester close to 9 teragrams of carbon per year. Riparian buffer, another silvopastoral system with great potential. Think about all the rivers and streams that we have in the U.S. If a 30-meter-wide riparian buffer is established along both sides of at least the major rivers, that would amount to 1.69 million hectares. And this picture comes from the Bear Creek watershed in Iowa, one of the most well-studied riparian buffer systems in the U.S. And some of these numbers also come from there, like if you use a 2.6 megagram of carbon per hectare per year potential, then riparian buffer could sequester close to 5 teragrams of carbon per year in the U.S. How does this compare with all the other estimates that exist today? Not only from agroforestry, but from other systems as well. Let's compare. Let's take a look. We were able to find at least a few estimates. The first one that I'm using here is from Meding et al. In 2002. They estimated that managed forests could sequester close to 530 teragrams of carbon per year. Their estimate for cropland was about 210. And then when you combine them together, that's about 740 teragrams of carbon per year that could be sequestered in the U.S. There is no agroforestry estimated in that particular study. Let's look at the one from Heath and co-workers and published in 2003. Their numbers are much smaller. Their managed forest estimate is only about 100. And keep in mind, Meding had close to 540, so five times. Of course, cropland, it's half of what they had estimated. They also had pasture. Combining all of this together, you get about 250 teragrams. Lal also had some estimates, and for cropland, his estimate was identical to Meding et al., about 210, 208. And Drs. Nair and Nair, they both are here, they estimated back in 2003 the agroforestry potential, and theirs was close to 100 teragrams of carbon. And here is what we came up with. Much bigger than what Dr. Nair came up with, and also even bigger than the cropland potential for the U.S. If we take out the forest land, the grazed forest, remember that close to 55 million hectares that are included, if we take that out and use only pasture, conversion of pasture to agroforestry or silver pastoral systems, then that number becomes, our estimate becomes about 200 teragrams of carbon per year. So, it shows that agroforestry has great potential. That is the bottom line. And if you compare that with the potential to mitigate the U.S. emissions, and the current U.S. emissions stand at 1,600 teragrams of carbon per year. So depending on which estimate that we use, the one without the grazed forest, then the 200 teragrams of carbon per year that agroforestry has the potential to sequester in the U.S. could offset the U.S. emissions by 13%. If we use the higher number, including the forest land that could be converted to silver pasture, then that number becomes 34%. Even 13 is a significant number. So agroforestry has great potential. That is the take-home message. So in conclusion, these preliminary estimates show great promise for agroforestry to sequester carbon and offset current U.S. carbon emissions. But as I said throughout my talk, a word of caution, these are just estimates. And these numbers need refining. For that, first of all, we need some land area under agroforestry. Unfortunately, the ag statistics don't include agroforestry, and the forestry statistics don't include agroforestry. So there needs to be a way to capture the land that is under agroforestry in the U.S. We are still talking about it. We still don't have a way to capture that. There is a little bit of data by NRCS. If they are cost-sharing in agroforestry practice, they capture a little bit of that data. That's the only thing that we have, but nothing comprehensive that captures everything. We also need more studies. If you look into the tropics, you will see a lot of studies looking at carbon sequestration, but that's not the case when it comes to temperate agroforestry systems. As I pointed out, forest farming, we don't even have any data. And we also need more data on soil carbon. Sometimes we have above and below, but there's nothing on soil carbon. So stay tuned. As I said, these numbers could change as we get more information. Again, thank you for your time. They include soil carbon, yes. Wherever possible, we were trying to include soil carbon, but there were some gaps. So they include the above ground carbon, the below ground carbon in roots, and then the soil carbon. Let me start talking about the animal production first, because silver pastoral systems can be controversial depending on, whether you are creating a silver pastoral system by converting a pasture or from going from a forest to a silver pasture. Our studies have shown that it can be beneficial. The reasons are, first of all, when you have a silver pastoral system, you can extend the growing, the season for the pasture to grow. You get an early spring crop growth or the pasture growth that extends to a late fall. When conventional pasture stops producing, the silvopastoral pastoral system, the pasture will still be producing because of the mitigating effects of the trees on the temperature. So inside a silvopastoral system, it gets warmer early, and it stays warmer longer. As a result, you get an increased production of fodder, of the pasture grass. It also is beneficial for the animals, especially in the heat of the summer. It has got the cooling effect. The U.S. cattle industry spends billions, they lose billions because of the heat stress. And they try all kinds of things to cool the cattle down. Most methods are very expensive. The silver pastoral route could be the cheapest way. The animals gain more weight because of the reduced heat stress in a silver pastoral system. And based on our studies, we have shown that it can be up to $43 per head. The gain just based on the heat stress reduction alone. We are not adding the value of the trees, or we are not stacking the price of the carbon, nothing. Just simply looking at the weight gain per head can be up to $43. And if you are a small farm with just 100 head, that translates to $4,300 per year. Substantial. So you have shown that, it can be beneficial. Any way you look at it, and your trees are still growing, you can sell the trees later on. That's another sort of income. And also, of course, you are accumulating carbon. If there is a carbon market, that could be sold as well. So we are not adding any of those. Just by the gate or the weight gain alone, that's $4,300. Now, going back to your question on crop growth, it depends. It depends on, whether you are growing a C4 crop versus a C3 crop. A C3 can tolerate a lot more shading than a C4. It also depends on what kind of trees you are growing and what growth stage they are. Early on, when you are establishing a tree, trees are going to be smaller, especially in an orchard setting. Most often they have to wait, whether pecan or almond or black walnut or chestnut or whatever. You have to wait for 7 to 10 years before they start producing anything for you. So the land is being, I'm not saying wasted, but fallowed in most cases. If that land can be used to grow an agronomic species, that is additional income. It could at least offset your establishment cost of that orchard. But sometimes you can extend that even into once this tree starts producing. So it can be. The economics is there to prove that combining trees and crops can be beneficial. When the trees are older, your crop growth may not be as high as the crop growth outside in a monoculture system. But still, combining the income from the crops as well as from the trees, it can be beneficial. It can be an economically viable option. And we have data to support that. Great. Lunchtime?
In lunchtime, before lunchtime, I have a quick announcement. The 1 o'clock one is canceled, unfortunately. But still, we have two very exciting speakers waiting for you at the starting at 1:30 this afternoon. So, thank you all for you for staying with us, and thank you, all the speakers.
Thank you.